Good day, good night, and welcome to Soccer Today for November 30th, 2018. I'm Kevin Lermay, joined by Dwayne Rollins on the line as well. To start the show today, we have Joshua Cloak from The Athletic, Toronto, The Athletic Soccer, and author of Come On You Reds, an oral history of TFC. Here is Dwayne Rollins with the first question to Joshua Cloak.
Writing this through the 2017 season, how nervous were you on MLS Cup Final that you were going to have to figure out a way to summarize this and wrap this up without that Hollywood ending?
Yeah, I was actually tremendously nervous. I remember waking up the morning of the final and kind of pacing around the house for a bit, and my wife kind of said, like, what are you doing? Like, you're not a fan. Like, what does it matter? And I said, you know, I really don't know how you finish this book, how you finish, you know, with an ending that you know, is not on a real super low note, because there's no way to write around the fact, if they had lost, that they would have lost, you know, two finals in a row at home to the same, you know, to the same team. It's hard to spin that into a, right, but there's always next year. And it, you know, I was genuinely nervous, but I think, you know, and Dwayne, you were watching as well, you see from pretty much kickoff there was no way TFC was losing that game. You know, if Drew Moore is getting a header from in close in the second or third minute, I think the writing was on the wall. I mean, they looked like they had solid chances before people were even in their seats, right? It was one of the most dominant performances in an MLS Cup final, I would argue, ever. And, you know, when Stephen Fry is having the game that he did, or the first half that he did, I was kind of getting a little nervous and kind of moving around a bit in my seat. When Altidore scores his goal, you know, there's rule number one is there's no cheering in the press box. But I did kind of pump my fist underneath my desk in the BMO Field press box, because you, again, like you said, you want an ending, and TFC fans had waited long enough for this happy ending. And I walked downstairs after, you know, the game into the press conference room, and one of our colleagues just kind of said, oh yeah, hey, now you get the ending you need for the book, as if like I hadn't been waiting kind of on bated breath for Altidore and Vasquez to score those goals. But anyway, to answer your original question, yeah, I was really nervous the morning of, because I don't know how I would have spun it otherwise had they lost, right?
No, fair enough. And I mean, a lot of this book, you know, the good ending, the great ending, the catharsisism that happened there when they won, a lot of that has to do with how crazy it was in the early years. And those early years were framed largely by one man who is maybe the only major figure that you didn't get to speak to in this book, that being, of course, Mo Johnston, who has not spoken to anyone about TFC since he left, or Major League Soccer since he left, which is curious. But at any rate, how disappointed were you didn't get an opportunity to talk to Mo?
Yeah, I was. I've told the story a few times. I think the morning after I signed the contract to write the book, I kind of sat down and compiled this list of emails that I had of people that I wanted to talk to, and I sent out just kind of a stock email to people, just gauging their interest and seeing if they'd be interested in speaking about the book. And I fired off about, I'm not kidding, about 50 emails within a few minutes, and I went downstairs and I came up just 5 minutes later, and I said, oh, someone's already written me back. Who would like to speak? And it was Mo was the first person to reply back, just to say, I'm not interested. And that was kind of crushing, because as you said, Mo is integral to the early days, and he's integral to kind of the startup mentality that really dominated TFC's approach early on, and that kind of flying by the seat of your pants approach that was so prevalent for so long at TFC. I went back to Mo, and I spoke to a lot of people about Mo, and I went back to Mo a few months later, and I just said, look, I have all these people talking about you, and I have, you know, these people that are saying this thing and this thing, perhaps it would be in your best interest to comment. And he wrote back again very quickly. I have to give him credit. He replies very quickly, and he just said, no, I'm not interested. Please don't ever contact me again. So it was pretty clear that the Mo didn't want to talk, and that's unfortunate. But you have to balance that with the fact that every other person that I approached not only wanted to speak but had really great insight and generally pretty positive things to say about their time at TFC.
While doing the research for your book, Joshua, I'm wondering if you've been following the club for a long time, what aspect of your research actually surprised you when you were doing it?
I think the fact that for so long, the people at the very top of the food chain at TFC and at MLSE really didn't have a good grasp of the intricacies of running an MLS club. MLS is a league that is bound by really strange and arbitrary and sometimes just straight up old-fashioned salary rules. And, you know, when it comes to buying and selling of players and when it comes to dealing with players from around the globe, it's very different from the way sports leagues operate in North America. And by that, I mean the NHL and the NBA. Teams that MLSC had or leagues that MLSC had teams in. So I think there was a bit of an assumption early on that things could kind of be run in the same way. And that's not to take away from how well run the Raptors and the Leafs were. But it's a very idiosyncratic league, MLS. And I think there were a lot of people early on that didn't understand the way the league worked. I mean, it was also a relatively new league that was still kind of finding its way. And I think if you talk to a lot of people within MLS, as I did, they kind of said that TFC ushered in MLS 2.0. And that is kind of countered with the fact that a lot of people up top just didn't understand the ins and outs of the soccer world. And I think that manifested in a new plan every single year and a new coach almost every single year that was, you know, his way was going to be the right way. And that's not to discredit a lot of really good, smart people that were working behind the scenes, but that was kind of the problem. A lot of people that did understand soccer were kind of marginalized and kept behind the scenes. And that was a problem early on. It was just TFC became known as a team, you know, where turnover was just a way of life. And it was frustrating because, again, you see that, you know, what's happened now with the Bill Mannings and Tim Bezpachenkos of the world. They understand MLS and they understand the North American soccer world. And that's what's kind of allowed them to kind of stabilize this franchise, right?
Yeah, and Joshua, my second question for you is, of all the people that you interviewed and that you were able to talk to for this book, which one actually surprised you with their answer, their openness, and which one would you see that you cannot have not in the book? Which character actually impressed you?
Yeah, sorry, you have to forgive me. You're kind of cutting out there. You might have to repeat that one.
I'm just asking, Joshua, and all the characters and the people that you did interview for your book, which one was surprising and impressing to you by their openness, their answers, and their sometimes able to throw themselves under the bus?
Yeah, to me, the person that also one that took a long time to track down, but when I did track him down, provided a lot of insight and provided a side to the story that isn't often heard is Ryan Nelson. Ryan Nelson came to TFC right before TFC changed their kind of designated player approach and that they wanted to go very, very big and they wanted to establish themselves as a front runner in terms of you know, acquiring big name players in MLS. And Ryan Nelson also came to TFC, you know, to be a coach while he was still a player in England. And I think that caught a lot of people off guard. And then he comes in and it was clear that he had philosophical differences with Tim Bezpachenko, the general manager. But, you know, Ryan Nelson accompanied Bezpachenko and Tim Leiwicki to England to acquire Jermaine Defoe and to kind of hear his perspective, to kind of hear about how, you know, it wasn't all glamour and it wasn't necessarily the smoothest of of interactions. And like you said, Ryan Nelson was very open and willing to admit his kind of deficiencies. You know, when you look at TFC now, you look at, like I said, a very stable franchise, and Ryan Nelson was kind of the last of that, I guess, you know, a time known for its instability. So to hear his kind of candor and to hear the way that he described, you know, bringing in Jermaine Defoe, and to hear him kind of describe the realities of what it's like to usher a new player, a very big name player like that, in the league was quite striking to me, because he hasn't really landed in coaching afterwards. So it was kind of his first big foray into coaching, and it never really took for him afterwards. And again, that kind of speaks to TFC's approach back then, which was, you know, if someone gets a big idea and someone thinks this is the way to go, it was very hard to convince people otherwise, right?
I believe they hired him and he started at center back for QPR the same day. So that says a little bit about TFC back then. But we have a lot of American listeners on the show, a lot of non-TFC listeners on the show. I think it's pretty obvious why a TFC fan would want to read this book. But Josh, why would a non-TFC fan, what would they benefit from this book? How is this a book about MLS as much as it's a book about TFC?
Yeah, I think that there could definitely stand to be more books written about MLS clubs, because, you know, a lot of MLS clubs have done a really good job at carving out their own identities. I mean, you look at Portland, who, you know, will be playing for MLS Cup next week. You know, you look at the Seattles of the world. Seattle, I know that Matt Pence is putting together what I assume is going to be a really excellent book on the Seattle Sounders. I think what fans would get out of it, non-TFC fans, were just how, kind of what I've been speaking about, just how hard it is for an MLS club to get it right. I mean, let's face it, it's very hard to win in MLS, even though it is a league that is supposedly driven by parity. And when you look at kind of the ins and outs of the league, and when you look at, you know, how difficult it is to sell this league sometimes to players from abroad, that can be really interesting to fans, because it's a league that I think was very much not taken seriously in the beginning by a lot of American fans, and now it is. It's getting proper coverage. It's a league that has incredible quality. But again, that isn't to say that, you know, you can just acquire a team or set up an expansion team and within a few years, you know, things will look good for you. I mean, it's a league that is still very much trying to find its way. And I think if you're interested in not just the growth of the league, but the ins and outs of a very, you know, Dwayne, you know, it's a very strange league to kind of be a part of sometimes. And if you're interested in the ins and outs of that, I think you'll find hopefully some value in that book.
Fair enough. And as you say, there's very few books out there. The Beckham Experiment, Bo Dur has one, Long-Term Goals, I believe it's called. It's decent. But yeah, not a lot out there, Joshua. Let's turn it general to this past season. We haven't talked about TFC on this show for about a month now, because why would you? But I've been reflecting on it during that month, and I still haven't completely figured out what happened this year. Do you have any insight into that?
Well, everything I've heard and everything I've seen is that this team was just exhausted. They were burnt out. And I think, you know, what we're seeing in 2018, there's just too much soccer. And if you're a fan, it's probably great, because you get to see your team more and more. But I think TFC suffered from just, you know, I think the well was just run dry with this team. They went to two straight MLS Cups, so you had about 43-44 day off seasons 2 years in a row. You add on Champions League, you add on the amount of travel that they had to do back and forth to Mexico. They made four trips to Mexico, including their preseason training camp down in Mexico, and I think players were just spent. I think TFC perhaps underestimated just how hard that travel would wear on their bodies, and I think management got very excited about winning CONCACAF Champions League and perhaps put too many eggs in that basket. I mean, I think if you speak to people like Greg Vanney, they'll kind of that they kind of alluded to that at their season end availability, that perhaps, you know, they went too big on Champions League and they didn't, you know, appreciate what it would take to win an MLS as well. I think, you know, a lot of people around the club also thought that, you know, TFC could just turn it on and turn on a dime, you know, at some point in the season. But it was just too much soccer, and there, I think a lot of bodies were just worn down. And it, look, we saw in 2017, the team did well because they were able to build momentum. I mean, they had two separate six-game winning streaks. That's almost unheard of now in MLS. And this year, I think they had one winning streak that was just two games. So they were just unable to build momentum because, you know, they suffered injury after injury. Their bodies were just broken. And I think in that regard, a long off season would not be the worst thing for this club moving forward.
To finish the interview, Joshua, by the way, we remember to our listener that you can find Come On You Reds, an oral history of TFC by Joshua Cloak on Dern Dern Press. To finish the show, Joshua, I'm asking you, Portland or Atlanta?
I would like to see Portland win. That's where my kind of heart is leaning. I love everything about the kind of the fan involvement, you know, within the club. I love Portland as a city. I've never been to Atlanta, so I'll say that. There's just something about that Portland team that, and you look at the way they won last night in late dramatic fashion, that kind of momentum can often carry over into a championship game. Look, Atlanta's easily one of the most creative teams offensively in MLS, but there's something about this Portland team that seems pretty special to me.
Joshua Cloak, author of Come On You Reds, an oral history of TFC, available right now on Dern Dern Press, everywhere you get your books. Thank you very much for your time today.
Thanks, boys.
We'll be right back after this break.
You are listening to Soccer Today. Follow us on Twitter at @SoccerTodaySPN and like our Facebook page, facebook.com/sportspodcastingnetwork. You can find the podcast version of all the shows we do on iTunes, Apple Podcast, Google Play Store, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, and anywhere you get your podcast.
And we're back on Soccer Today. I'm Kevin Larmy, joined by Dwayne Rollins, as always. So, Dwayne, yesterday we had the day off because, well, I couldn't speak. Couldn't speak more than usually. Like, I was worse than before. And today I'm a bit on demand. But, yeah, so if you have to get a teeth pull out there, people, and they ask you, can we cut your gum? Just say no.
Just saying, indeed. I haven't had dental surgery in a while, but I do remember it not fondly at all. The laughing gas was fun.
Oh, yeah. There was no laughing gas where I was coming. And that's too bad. But it's the last one. My teeth are good now. I'm good. And I'm good for a long time. Speaking of good, Sebastian Blanco, that goal last night from, 30-something yards out, beating Tim Melia, and qualifying Timbers Portland to the MLS Cup final and destroying my prediction bracket. Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Blanco. Yep, I was wrong yet again.
And I had New York winning MLS Cup, so neither one of us is going to win that pool. And we all know what Kevin's going to pick for MLS Cup next year now, so we don't even have to do the preview show.
The preview show. Kansas City 2019. It's going to happen.
Just keep throwing that against the wall. Look, I tweeted out with the 40th minute that Portland's clearly going to win this because Kansas City was killing them up until that goal. And then suddenly it was a pretty even and exciting second half after that. The less we talk about the first game, the better, perhaps. Maybe we'll touch on it in a minute. But no, I lived up to it. I don't know whether either one of those teams is going to be able to beat Atlanta, which does look like they're rolling pretty well, especially at home right now. But it was an exciting game, and it's why MLS playoffs are fun. It's why we keep playoffs around, man. It's I get why there's so many people out there, and this debate flared up again last night with New York fans basically yelling about how the playoffs were ridiculous and how blah, 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 blah. The league is set up as a playoff league. That means that the playoffs are what matters, period, end of story. It's just not debatable, right? And they give you moments like that. And I think that moments like that are important in North American sports. You need those excitement, those things that you take away. What do we still talk about in the show to this day? You know, the show that was originally called The Two Solitudes because of the Montreal-Toronto thing. We still talk about those moments, both sad and good, that happened between Toronto and Montreal in what? A playoff
2016.
Game.
Yeah, in a playoff series, which will probably disappear next year. But that's another topic for the offseason. We'll know more about this aspect of the playoffs after MLS Cup, where the Board of Governors is going to meet and going to vote on a lot of different issues. You mentioned Atlanta. They lost 1-0 last night, but they won the home and away series 3-1. This game was decided in the first leg, and Atlanta staying home for what could be the biggest attended MLS Cup ever.
Well, they will be. They'll fill that place out. Yeah. I mean, and it's interesting. I mean, I know people don't necessarily consider MLS at the same level as the quote-unquote Big Four, or even college football for that matter, but when you look at the championships that have happened, including MLS in the past few years, you look at the cities that have finally won. There's a whole bunch of snake-bitten cities that have won championships. Toronto won the championship last year in Major League Soccer. The Cleveland Cavaliers, of course, won a championship. Famously, the most snake-bitten of all, the Chicago Cubs won a championship recently. My beloved Washington Capitals, another snake-bitten DC sports situation. And there is one city that has not done that yet that has a very long slump of not winning a championship. And where is that, Kevin?
Hotlanta. So, Luda. Welcome to Atlanta, people.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know if that means anything, but it certainly has been a 5-year stretch or so of the cities that can never win winning. So it's going to be interesting there, and they have to be. Look, I saw Atlanta play on the eve of the playoffs when they had the shield in their sights, and they coughed up a hairball. And maybe that was a lesson. You know, Toronto came out that day. I think they wanted to protect their points record. They wanted to make some kind of statement to end the season. And they're a very good team, as Josh said, that just were kind of beat up. And they were healthier on that final day. And they, you know, they did what statement they could. But I think that from an Atlanta perspective, what Toronto did to them on that last day is they showed them that they needed to step it up if they were going to win at the business end of the season. And they did. So I don't see a way that, other than Portland just seems to Portland a lot, the Timbers, and I say this with all due respect, have not been particularly strong other than, you know, Larry and flashes. They have won a championship. Obviously, they're going back to a second MLS Cup, but their seasons have never been consistent in a way that you would expect from a top team, but yet they still manage to find a way to win. Now, you can say, is that clutch? Is that some kind of intangible? I don't know, because they also find ways to lose, because when they've been bad, they've been bad, right?
Yeah.
So that's the only argument that I can make, other than, you know, Valeri's very good, but Atlanta's got a lot of stars too. Like, it's not, there's no obvious who the best player in the pitch is going to be.
Valeri on one side, and the other side of the balance, you have Almirón, Josef Martínez, so Blanco on the other side. At the end of the day, I think they're equivalent. Like, we say often, in championship games, the team with the best star has the most probability of winning. In this case, both outweighs each other, I believe. So it might become the death of the team that becomes more important on Saturday, December 8th.
Yeah, and which is going to be one hell of a day for soccer, because, of course, the Women's World Cup draw takes place that morning. So lots to talk about that day, and Kevin and I will discuss what our plans are and let you know how we're going to handle MLS Cup week. I don't think either one of us has the I'm trying to
I'm
get
not
France
going to
the next year.
No, I'm getting married. So
Kevin's getting married, and I'm trying to go to France next summer. So Atlanta, unless someone wants to, some Patreon out there wants to really be nice, is not going to happen for us. But certainly we will give you some extra shows probably, and we'll get some Atlanta guests and some Portland guests lined up and play it up right. But it's not the cup final I would have guessed, but it never is. Once again, the West has managed to produce. When was the last time the top seed in the West got out?
LA? I don't remember.
Galaxy in 14, maybe?
Maybe,
it's,
yeah.
It's been a while. Yeah,
it's been a while. There's been a lot of upsets, yeah.
Yeah, it's the West has produced surprise finalists. So well, that second final they got back.
Seattle got out twice the last 2 years, and they were not
Seattle's
first.
Seattle's a good team, but they were fifth the year they won.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And the year after, they were like third or second or something. But no, yeah, you're absolutely right. So it'll be interesting. It's MLS Cup week. We'll have more shows, more interviews this week. We'll get Atlanta guests. We'll get a Portland guest, and we'll see how this unfolds. But before we move to the weekend, Dwayne, we're going to have a special show this weekend. We just don't know when we're going to record it. We wish we would have done it today, but my mouth doesn't permit me to talk too much, so I'm doing okay now, but we'll see for the other show. The Two Solitude Soccer Podcast for patrons only, Canadian Soccer only, will be recorded this weekend, looking at the Women's World Cup U17 final and the third place game. Looking at, of course, the Canadian Premier League, their first signings were announced yesterday, Dwayne, and a few familiar faces for Canadian soccer fans. Kyle Becker, formerly of Toronto FC, FC Dallas, the Montreal Impact, Ottawa Fury, San Francisco Delta, has signed with Hamilton Forge FC. Zachary Secunda, former FC Montreal player, academy product of the Montreal Impact from the Ottawa region, has signed with the Halifax Wanderers. Congratulations, Zachary. And other well-known faces, Kyle Neville Porter, formerly of the Ottawa Fury, has signed with York 9. And what was your overall thought on the signings yesterday? Not too long. We'll keep this for the Two Solitude Soccer Podcast available at patreon.com/sportspodcastnetwork. But what was your overall thought?
I'll have more on Canadian soccer news too. I'm going to have a rare article go out here because I'm going to find some time today to get some thoughts down on paper to get them out there. But my overall thought is that there were some good signings in there, but these signings were, the Becker one made a lot of sense, and I like that one. I like the type of player that is getting a second chance here, but the hype that these guys are going to be are getting as the original players. Is maybe not completely justified based on where they are and where they'll be on that roster next year. This is, I think, a marketing initiative to keep the Canadian Premier League in the news. So that's fine, but that's kind of my initial thought with that. I mean, they don't have I know Jordan Hamilton, for instance, to give you a little bit of a tidbit of news, has been someone that they really, really wanted to get on board, but Jordan's still not necessarily out of TFC's plans. He's out of contract, but he might look to renegotiate there. He's considered domestic league-wide because of his status as an academy graduate for TFC before the certain date. So he has options in MLS he's going to pursue. There's no way they're getting him before January, right? And that's kind of anyone I talk to in the soccer side of things says that the real signings in this league will happen in January or towards the end of January, really, because that's when players that are, with all due respect, we all want it to succeed, but it's not going to be anyone's first choice unless they're a young Canadian right now, right?
Yeah, it makes a big difference. So hopefully we'll have another few familiar faces in January. But what I was happy about is, first of all, those hoodies look sick. I want one of those. Halifax Wanderers, hello. I want one of those Macron hoodies. But I was happy for a few players that I personally have been in contact with in those players that were announced yesterday, for them to have that second chance or for them to come back home. Just when you look at Zachary Secunda, an example for Halifax Wanderers, he wandered the world, went to Sweden, went to Umeå, and then he went to Australia, played for Hume City FC and Northcote FC in the second division there too. And as much as it is fun to travel and play your passion, the world of soccer, the salaries that you do make are not even usually enough to have a proper living in those parts of the world where the cost of living is very expensive. And for him to come back to Halifax, come back home and be able to have friends and family, just have a little flight and get there and watch him play, I think it is one of the good aspects of this league too. So I'm really happy for those reasons.
Fair enough. All right, well, I'll end it with a little bit of actual news, I think. I think most people assume this, but I was able to confirm yesterday that the roster sizes off launch will be 20, not 24. So they are going to try and keep it thin that way and save a little money on the back end. And it's been told to me, and this is, again, something that most people understood, but it was confirmed to me that that they expect and sort of are encouraging clubs to use those 12 through 20 spots on the roster to be almost entirely locally focused. And in fact, some of the clubs, Pacific being the one that I think is most bought into this, intend to make their team hyper-local. So don't expect non-BC players on Pacific. Maybe one or two imports, but other than that, the rest of that lineup will be almost entirely Lower Mainland and Vancouver Island players, which I think is a good thing. So that's kind of a little bit of a direction of what this league's going to look like in the early days. So there's fun. And, you know, I've been tweeting a little stuff about York 9, and York 9's philosophy might be a little bit more, let's get a big name in there that has an Italian surname.
I thought you were going to say Jimmy Brennan's making a comeback and he's going to be the center back, the starting center back for York 9.
Yeah, no, but speaking of comeback, and maybe this will be my final thought, the Mississauga Metro Stars will open up their indoor season tomorrow at 6 p.m. You can watch those games on YouTube, the Major Arena Soccer League. You'll just Google that and or YouTube that, I guess, and you'll be able to find them. You can watch that free all year. I am going to be at their home opener next week. I gave away tickets on Twitter last night. If the person gets back to me with their name by the end of the day, otherwise we'll have to try it again. I'm kind of weirdly excited to watch that. I used to watch a lot of arena soccer, or indoor soccer as we called it back then, when I was a kid growing up with my satellite dish. You remember watching Milwaukee and Rochester? Those were the teams that always stuck out to me. But
the Montreal Impact, Wayne. That's what I remember.
There you go. The Baltimore Blast are the team that Mississauga will play tomorrow. And Dwayne DiRosario making his competitive soccer comeback on North situation. Baltimore Blast have been around since the 70s. Moba Bully as well, who I will be speaking to in person next Tuesday. I have arranged to have a one-on-one interview with Mo, which will probably be on our Wednesday show, or I might put it out special, where I will be recording one-on-one with him in person. So the restraining order has been lifted, and I will be speaking to Mo next week.
I was going to say, how many security guards will be there to protect Mo from you? So maybe none. We'll see. But thanks to the Metro Stars for their help in setting up all of this and for the tickets. And you'll have more Mississauga Metro Stars content throughout the season. We'll get a few players on the show just to give us a bit of an insight into the only Canadian team into the Major Arena Soccer League. And it gives us something to talk about during Major League Soccer's offseason. Of course, there's the Champions League, Europa League, Chelsea 4-0 yesterday. That was a good win. But on that note, we'll be back this weekend with a special Two Solitude Soccer podcast for patrons only. Make sure you subscribe at patreon.com/sportspodcastingnetwork. $2 a month will give you access to the show, and if you have been a subscriber for a long time and your feed is frozen on November 7th, make sure you go to the website patreon.com/sportspodcastnetwork. It's just a question of clicking the right box, of clicking the $2 tier or more, and it'll refresh the feed, and then you will get the shows of the last couple of weeks. Thank you to Chris for mentioning this to me, and a few other listeners as well, like Pierre, who mentioned it to me, and I looked into it, and it's Patreon's new back-end way, but make sure you click that box. And on that note, you can follow Dwayne on social media at 24th Minute, myself at Kev Laramie. I need to rest my mouth, and we'll be back very shortly with another edition of Soccer Today, the world of soccer, with the world of football with a soccer perspective. I need to shut up now. Have a great soccer.
You can find the podcast version of all the shows we do on iTunes, Apple Podcast, Google Play Store, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, and anywhere you get your podcast.